Suppose that f of z is holomorphic, but except that it has singularities isolated singularities at points like z1 dot dot zn, now which then if you have a contour which surrounds these singularities, so these are z1, z2, z3, z4, etc., dot, 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 zn, and there might be singularities which I'm calling, say, zn plus 1 and plus 2 outside the contour. But what the residue theorem tells us is that if we take a contour integral on if you do a contour integral over the contour C, then this integral is given by the sum 2 pi I, the sum over the residues of this function at the singularities which are contained inside the contour. So there might be singularities of this function outside, but for this integral, we don't care about what the value of the residues are at those points. Okay. So this is the so the way that philosophy that one uses to compute integrals using this theorem is that you choose the contour such that part of the contour lies on the real axis. And then you choose the contour in such a way that you can usually ignore the rest of the contour which does not lie on the real axis in some limit. So this is best seen. That's kind of roughly the general philosophy. But that's not the... That's one of the philosophies. The other one is actually... For example, if you're doing a contour integral over, if you're doing a real integral over a periodic variable, so you're going from 0 to 2 pi, in that case, you can take your, you can interpret that as a contour integral over a circle on the complex plane. So let's try some examples. So the first integral that we're going to try is the real integral. It's a trigonometric integral. So where A and B are real numbers, and A is greater than B is greater than 0. So we want to interpret this integral as a contour integral over a circle, a unit circle, on the complex plane. So we want to rewrite this in terms of complex variables. So let's define z to be e to the power I phi. Then d of theta is minus I of dz over z. And then the circular function cosine of theta. Now, we know that the definition of cosine of theta is this. Now, we have a choice. We can write this like this with involving z and z bar. But if you do that, we won't be able to use complex analysis anymore because we need our functions to be holomorphic. And holomorphic... on the contour, And so as we saw in the tutorial, you know, on the unit circle, z bar is equal to 1 over z. So we can write it like that. And if you do that, then everything is fine. So now we can now rewrite our integral. And then simplify it a little bit. There should be an A here. So now evaluating the integral just involves computing the residue of this integrand. There should be d of z, of this integrand at the singularities which are inside the unit circle. So what are the singularities inside the unit circle? To find that out, we have to figure out the zeros of this polynomial. This is just a quadratic. So the zeros of these guys are at z plus minus 1, and this is a by b. Now note that because a is greater than b, minus a by b is less than minus 1. And also a squared minus b squared is a real number. So we are adding a minus. If you look at the minus sign over here, we are adding a negative number to something which is already less than minus 1. So z minus is going to be less than minus 1. So that means that it'll be outside the unit circle. So that is not the, so z minus is not the singularity that we're interested in. Now what about z plus? So if you multiply z plus and z minus, then you see that you basically get a squared by b squared minus right, so which is 1. So which means that z plus, the singularity at z plus, is inside the unit circle. So now we can just write down that this guy is, we already had a minus 2i times 2 pi I, the residue of the function f of z at z plus. Now I'm not going to do the calculation explicitly. But if you do that and you multiply out by I and stuff like that, then you get, I think this is correct. I quickly checked in Mathematica to see if my calculation was right. But Mathematica doesn't seem to have this factor of b here. So you might want to check that. So this is a very simple example of the application of the residue theorem. There's another class of integrals that you will come across quite frequently. Yes?
One question. If you take b to 0 here, you get 1 over z. So the limit has to be pi. So maybe we have the b.
Is it without b, you're saying?
If you make if b tend to 0 in the integral, you get 1 over z.
But b can't tend to 0 because a has to be greater than.
Right, okay, so you're saying, okay. Anyway, you should just do it very carefully and you'll find out whether there's a b or not. So another class of integral that you can do is integrals of the form, say, real integral. So this is number 2, real integrals of the form a squared plus where again a and b are real numbers. And initially, let's choose a to be not equal to b. Now, for these guys, kind of, so first notice that this kind of, this integral can be seen as, because it's an even function, this can be written as half of the integral, but now the limits are from minus infinity to plus infinity. Now, how do we use complex variables to evaluate integrals like this? Well, this is quite famous. You'll see this quite often. The trick is to choose some semicircular contour. So let me use a different color for that. Something that sticks out. Let's use red.
So Maple also claims that there's no factor B in the denominator. So it's 2 pi over
this one?
Yeah, when
that's what Maple claims.
That's what Maple says? Mathematics says something completely different.
But when you calculate the hand, so the residue should be z plus minus 1 over z plus minus z minus. So
right,
the
right.
Only way it can happen is you have the square root twice. This has to be p over in the square root. So at least when you...
Okay, I'll leave it as an exercise to figure out where I made the typo, so mistake. So that'll be an exercise for you. So let's consider a semicircular, sorry, this is not a very good semicircle, a semicircular contour where this distance, I will call this distance r, and this distance r. And then call the semicircular bit so gamma, and call this C1, call this C2. So the idea is now that if you look at for now, let's just complexify this integral. So now we are going to consider, instead of the real integral, our integrand would be f of z. And instead of x and y, x, we just considered this to be z. Now, for this particular kind of functions, it doesn't matter if we use a semicircle on the upper half plane or the lower half plane. So what we do is that if we now consider this integral where the contour is this whole contour, closed contour, and then let r go to infinity. So if we let now r go to infinity, then this integral reduces to this integral. Now, we have to be very careful that we let the distance from the origin to this point and the distance from the origin to this point, we choose both of them to be equal and let them go to infinity at the same time. If we had chosen this to be R1 and this to be R2, so this was kind of a bit of a skewed contour, we could in principle actually get any result that we wanted. So for this process to be well defined, the two arms, the C1 and C2, the length of C1 and C2 have to be the same. And for this particular integral, so then you can see that what happens is this guy, the semicircular bit, when R goes to infinity, that f of z on the semicircular bit is going to be something like r to the power 4, e to the power I 4 theta. So this is going to go to 0 as r goes to 0, as r goes to infinity. So let's look at a specific example of this. Actually, well, not specific example. Let's just do that integral. So let's, you know, just like Freddie was saying, you know, he likes a certain lexicographical ordering of his symbols. So he likes A to come before B. So for me, you know, I like when there's a choice, I like closing the contour in the upper half plane. So so what are the poles of the integrand in the upper half plane? Can somebody tell me? What are the singularities of f of z in the upper half plane?
IA and IB,
right? Of course, assuming that, let's assume A and B are greater than 0. So the poles are at IA and IB. That's where the poles are. So and then so the integral is then half because we are doing the integral from minus infinity to plus infinity times 2 pi I limit z goes to IA IB so we have over here we have just substitute these guys, then we have z squared minus b squared 2ib. And if you simplify this further, you get pi by 2ab. Now, in case, so this is. So in case a was equal to b, then the poles that we would have would not be simple poles anymore, but these poles would be double poles. So there would be a double pole at IA and another double pole at minus IA. Then we would have to, the computation of the residue would be different. And so do people remember how to compute the double pole? Okay. Well, let's do it anyway. So then we are computing the double pole of this function. So then the integral would be half times 2 pi I. Then the limit where z is going to I of a and d by dz. And here we multiply by z minus I of a times the integrand, which now I rewrite as z minus I a squared z plus I a squared. There should be a square here, so this will cancel this guy. And then if you do this, you put everything together, this is what you get. So, the integrals that you actually come across in quantum field theory and places like that is a bit closer to my next example. So, my next example is So far we have seen an integral which is a trigonometric integral, another integral which has a polynomial denominator, and now we can actually evaluate integrals which are a combination of these things. So the next one is, say, evaluating from minus infinity to plus infinity sine of x divided by, say, x squared plus x plus 1 d of x. So on the real axis, the real part of, so that integral is equal to the real part of so basically this is the guy that we want to evaluate. Now this is very similar to the example that we did, that you know there are going to be some poles on the, you know, away from the real axis, and then so we are tempted to use a semicircular contour, except that we now don't have a choice on whether to close the contour above in the upper half plane or the lower half plane. Why is that? Right. Because of this factor e to the power ix, if you were to close the contour in the lower half plane, then see EI, so let's consider this. And so this is going to be so on the lower half plane, yes.
I think it should be the imaginary curve, or maybe you can put an I in.
Yeah.
So yeah.
1/i also.
Okay.
1/i.
If it's out, part of the then it goes in I.
Excuse me. It's fine. Imaginary part of a complex number is a real number. So in the lower half plane, y is negative. So as we take our, if we were to choose a contour which closed on the lower half plane, then as we made the contour larger and larger, this contribution would be, you know, would become larger and larger, and the damping effect of the denominator won't be able to keep up with that. So to actually ensure that the only contribution to the integral comes from the real axis, we are forced to choose a contour which we have to close in the upper half plane. So I think this this sort of integral, the condition under which this sort of integral are, you know, you can do these integrals is formalized in a lemma called Jordan's lemma. I'm not gonna go and formalize this thing, but you can look it up. So to evaluate this integral, we then have to consider what are the poles or what are the zeros of this polynomial. So it turns out that the solution to this so there are somewhere, this is your, so they're somewhere here and here. And and the residue that we have to calculate is the residue at this point. So now if you compute the residue, then you basically, and then take r equals to infinity, then this is the answer you should get. And again, just to save a little bit of time, I'm not going to do this explicitly. So this should be the answer you should get. Let's call this I3. So this is what I3 is going to be. Okay, so did everybody follow why we had to close the contour on the upper half plane? This is crucial. Okay. So far, we haven't considered. I'm actually going much faster than I thought I was. So I might have to slow down. Okay. So far, we have been considering examples where there are no singularities on the real axis. But we can even. Well, of course, you don't want to consider an integral as a real integral. You're not expecting there to be a singularity in your integrand on the real axis. But in evaluating certain integrals, one has to consider analytic functions, complex functions, which may have singularities on the real axis. And to deal with those kind of situations, it's useful to know what a mouse hole contour is. So, let's look at a mouse hole contour. So this is a subject that would make my cat Sparky very happy. So, for example, so let's first prove a simple theorem. Suppose f of z has a simple pole. Suppose f of z has a simple pole at the point A with a residue, say, sigma. Then suppose that we choose a contour which is segment of a circle with radius epsilon around this point A, where T is a real parameter which goes from beta to alpha. So let me just draw a picture. So we have the point A here, and we have some segment of a circle. And so this is a horizontal line. So this doesn't have to be on the real axis. And this is some angle alpha, and this is some angle beta. So let me just make sure that the contour is the red bit. Then in the limit in which epsilon goes to 0, and we do the, so this is not a closed contour.
Okay.
Yes?
Is that angle that should be?
Sorry?
Shouldn't be from the positive to the angle.
Oh, right. So you mean T
is pi minus. No, so alpha is okay.
Alpha is okay.
Beta's
oh,
okay.
Right. Yeah, sorry. So then the limit of f of z, d of z, is so this is the theorem. And this is a quite an easy theorem to prove, and I'll let you guys prove it, but the thing to do is that you define some function g of z in the following way. It's f of z is equal to g of z plus sigma divided by z minus a. And then g of z is holomorphic at So g of z is holomorphic around the region z equals to a. And then you just consider this integral. So because g of z is holomorphic in the limit epsilon goes to 0, the contribution from this goes to 0. And you're left with this. So an interesting example of this theorem is if you compute the integral of this function, now, this may look a little bit, this may look singular, but if I expand the sign around x equals to 0, then we find that this is actually not a singular, the function is not singular. So we might be tempted to try. Sorry, I'll probably write over there because I'm not sure how visible that corner of the board is. So let's consider what would be probably the most simple-minded complex function that we should try to use for this integral, which is just making everything into a replacing all the x's with z's and replacing the sign by an exponential. So you might be tempted to try this. But this guy has a triple pole at z equals to 0. And to see that, you know, if we expand the exponential, so this guy goes away. So the leading term in this is 1 over z cubed, and then we have other stuff. And this means that there is an triple pole at z equals to 0. So instead, we can try f prime of z, which is this f of z, plus 1 by z cubed. So this is, so adding that term just gets rid of this triple pole. So then what was the term which came after 1 over z cubed? This was the term which was 1 over z cubed times z squared by factorial of 2. So the second most singular term was a simple pole. So by adding this term, we have found a function which has a simple pole at z equals to 0. So I of z now has a plus 1 minus e to the power I of z by z cubed. So if we now take the imaginary part of this guy, then we end. Imaginary part of this function f prime on the real axis. where then we actually get that this integrand. In effect, what all that we have done is we have added 1 to this, the numerator here. So we haven't really changed the imaginary part of this, of that function on the real line. So now the contour that we're going to try is the following. So we have a singularity at the origin. So we cannot, our contour cannot go there. So we'll go from here. We'll do a little mouse hole. So this is C1. This is C2, this is C3, then right. So this is say C4. So the integral over this whole closed contour, f prime of z. D of z is going to be the integral over C1, which is this bit, integral over C3. I'm writing C1 and C3 first because in the limit where I let the radius of this guy go to infinity and the radius of this thing, which I'll call epsilon. So in the limit where r goes to infinity and epsilon goes to 0, these two integral will actually give us what we need, what we want. It'll give us actually, it'll give us twice this, right? Yeah. So anyway. So in the limit where r goes to infinity, the contribution from this guy, the big contour, it goes to 0. And you can see that by just considering each term in this integrand separately. Because the first two terms are like the first integral that we considered. And the last term is like the third integral that we considered. And that's why we're closing the contour in the upper half plane. And now, because this integrand didn't have a singularity inside the contour, the contour integral over the closed contour was 0. But the left side, so the left side of this is the integral over C1, C3, and we've taken the limit, okay, we are taking the limit r goes to infinity and epsilon goes to 0. Then what survives is simply the contribution from this bit using our theorem over here. And so, which turns out to be minus I pi by 2. So now if you take the So if you take the imaginary part of this, then so let's use that word over there.
Can we take the limits R to infinity and epsilon to 0, why can't we take them separately?
I don't see why you can't, because I think you can take them separately, but what you have to do is you just have to make sure that C1 and C3, the length of C1 and C3 are always equal. So I don't know why we couldn't, if you work out the Cauchy principal value integral, I don't see any problem why we cannot take it separately. So it's just that you can't take the C1, you can't take the length of C1 and C2 to be separate. So you cannot introduce more parameters. And the parameters have to be R and epsilon. You cannot introduce because in that case, you know, if you took the length of C1 and C2 to be separate, then you could always arrange that the contribution from the left side and the contribution, the difference or the between the left side and the right side was some particular number. And then you could take C1 and C2 go to infinity in such a way that the difference of those two guys were always some number. And you could actually get any result you wanted.
But then Jordan's lemma wouldn't work anymore. So you would get the contribution
right
difference from
upper contribution as well, yeah.
So I think, so any country you choose, it should give you the same value. But
right.
But then you would have Jordan's calculating.
Right, right. Yeah, you couldn't use Jordan's lemma, yeah. Okay, so so what was our integral is, so we are, so from minus infinity to plus infinity, we have I of z plus 1, and we're taking the imaginary part of this. So let's just put it x because we're on the real axis now. And minus e to the power I of x divided by x cubed d of x. And that's minus I pi by 2. So we get, I think it is correct, x minus sine of x, x cubed of d of x.
Deposit.
Yeah, I think I messed up somewhere.
You pick up a negative sign from going the other way around the inner
circle. Oh, right.
Yeah, because you're going clockwise.
Yeah.
So in the C2 contrary path, clockwise direction, which is input one.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. Because when we use the theorem, we are going the other way around, so you get up. Sign here. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So The last thing that we're going to do is doing some integrals which involve branch cuts. It would be disappointing not to return to branch cuts after the excitement of last week involving them. So suppose you have, so for some integrals, you want to introduce, you want to introduce a logarithmic function which has branch cuts. So apart from, not only are branch cuts not scary, they're actually useful. So for example, let's consider an integral of the form, say, 0 to infinity. And a lot of integrals of this form can be evaluated by computing by considering the following contour integral. You take the complexification of the function f of x and then introduce in your integrand a logarithmic factor. So the function f of z must have some certain properties. So we assume that f of z does not have any singularities, any poles on the positive real axis. So f of z is no singularities along the positive real axis. Then one considers a contour which is like this. You go along. Before we do that, you have to choose where the branch cut of the log function is going to be. And so we choose the log to have its branch cut along the, going from 0 to the, along the real positive axis. That's our branch cut. And we take our contour. Like this. Where the big, so this is say R, and this is epsilon. So in the limit where r goes to infinity, we are going to assume that our function is such that there isn't going to be any contribution from the large circle. Well, it's not really a circle. It's almost a circle. And also, in the limit where epsilon goes to 0, we are going to assume that that this integral, the contribution to this integral from the small circle is going to be well behaved, something that, that also actually goes to 0. So if we assume these two things, then let's call the big circle C1. And this bit C2, this small circle C3, this C4. Sorry, I think I'm going over time, right? Does anybody have the time?
It's 47.
47, so I'll take 3 more minutes. Sorry, I did start late, so I'm 5 minutes late, so I'm going to go 5 minutes late. So, okay, so if you consider the integral, say, along C2 and C4, so the integral around C2 and C4 in the limit where r goes to infinity is given by the following. So this is C4. C4 goes from 0 to infinity. F of x log of x d of x. And the integral around C2 is going to be from plus infinity to 0. And there's going to be f of x log of x plus 2 pi I. So this is in the limit where r goes to infinity and epsilon goes to 0. So this 2 pi I comes up because the log function is a multivalued function. And having gone around the complex plane once, it picks up 2 pi I, the monodromy 2 pi I. So this guy is, so this thing is equal to minus 2 pi I 0 to infinity so f of x d of x. So thus we see that this integral I is given by, is actually equal to, by choosing the contour in a very careful way, we have actually been able to, that this thing is actually, that the logarithm that we inserted into our original integrand gives us the integral that we want. So what is this going to be equal to? This is going to be equal to all the singularities of this integrand inside the closed contour. So that's going to be equal to the sum 2 pi I times the sum of residues of the function fz times log of z inside the closed contour. So by computing the residues of this function inside the closed contour, we can evaluate integrals of this type. So there will be one example of this kind of integral in today's tutorial. But thank you. Any questions? So unfortunately, there are several topics that I wanted to cover, but I haven't been able to cover. And one of them being analytic continuation of complex functions, which is an exciting subject. In mathematical physics course, you will get, Carl Bender will tell you about analytic continuation and how analytic continuations of complex functions can be used to understand the energy eigenvalue structure of quantum mechanics. Thank you.